You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Next up, an inside look at what seems to be an increasingly common surgery separating conjoined twins. Carl and Clarence Aguirre are 18-month-old Filipino twins joined at the head, and earlier this week, surgeons performed the first in a series of operations that will eventually, months from now, it is hoped, result in the boys' separation. Joining me now to talk about the boys and the surgeries planned for them are the two doctors leading the surgical team. Dr. James Goodrich is a pediatric neurosurgeon at Children's Hospital and Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx. Dr. David Staffenberg is the chief of pediatric plastic surgery at Children's Hospital of Montefiore. Both doctors are here in our New York studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having us.
You know, let me ask you, Dr. Goodrich, it seems we hear more and more of these surgeries going on. Are there more children having this, or are we just hearing more about them?
No, I think the answer is your second part of your question, that the news media is obviously quite interested in it, and any time something like this happens, people generate the interest. But no, I don't think there's an increased incidence at this point.
How common are conjoined twins?
The published number is 1 per 2.5 million live births. It's actually higher than that because most of them are actually stillborn or miscarried.
We have some castings that were made of the twins, and you can see them on our website at Science Friday. Drill down into our program for the day, and the next page after, and you can see it. You took these castings, but you didn't take them in the old-fashioned way that we would think with plaster and whatever. How did you do these?
Well, these are really very interesting. You'd sort of think normally, if you look at these pictures, that Carl and Clarence were simply smothered in some sort of molding material, and then the molds were filled with plaster. But what we actually do is sedate Carl and Clarence and get CAT scans and MRIs so that we can really see what's going on for Dr. Goodrich at the neurosurgical level. And then that data, just tons and tons of numbers, are put on a disc and actually shipped, in this case, to Colorado to a company called Medical Modeling, and they produce these images in 3D from the CAT scan data. Mm. So what the company can do is actually feed in whatever we're interested in this white cast that looks like plaster. The computer was simply told, we want to see what the skin looks like, and so this three-dimensional rendering gets printed out.
You have this transparent, translucent plastic model here, and you've opened it up for us, and we've seen inside it. What are we looking at, the actual veins and arteries inside the skull there?
Yes, the problem always with conjoined twins and the nature they're fused at the head, that the surgical problem is always trying to get the venous portion of the circulation separated. So what we asked the computer to do was render us a model showing us the venous outflow pattern, and we're actually using that as a surgical roadmap as we're doing the surgery.
And what did you discover when you saw the pictures? Was that good news for the twins, which is on there?
Well, yes, it was, actually. I mean, the worst-case scenario would have been we would have seen such a complex sharing that it would not be separable. But as is very typical in conjoined twins, what we see is one child, one half has the major part of the sinuses, the other half has the less major. So that allows you to make a surgical decision as to which child gets the major portion of the vessels.
Mm-hmm. And one operation, Dr. Staffenberg, has already been completed, correct? One part
correct.
Of it? What was the purpose of that?
Well, this past Monday, we had an opportunity to take Carl and Clarence into the operating room, and we accomplished two things. One was that Dr. Goodrich had an opportunity to do a craniotomy, remove a portion of the shared bone from their foreheads, look inside at the brains themselves and the blood supply, and I also had an opportunity to insert tissue expanders, but I think Dr. Goodrich should talk about what he saw.
Well, one of the things I was most interested in was how these brains came together. Were they tightly fused, interdigitated, or were they just abutting each other? So part of it was to just get a feeling, the gestalt of what was going on. And fortunately, the area that we looked in, it's a matter of they are abutting but are not tightly fused. So that's certainly prognostically much better for the children.
So what do you have to do inside there? What's the plan?
Well, it's a long plan, but I mean, most people think of this as just a separation. It's obviously much more involved than that. Not only do you have to anatomically separate it, but you have to do it in such a fashion that both children have viable vascular supplies. Dr. Staffenberg has to be able to cover all this at the end because you have no skull, you have no dura mater, the membrane that goes over the brain, and scalp covering. So each of the stages has to be planned such that the separation is done with the least ill effect on the children, and then, of course, at the end, you have enough material to put everything back together. And it's obviously taken a huge team effort to get this all put together.
The most recent case of the twins in Texas, was it?
Yes.
That was a long marathon, 30-hour operation. You're not going down that path.
No, different philosophies, and I'll say right off the bat, nobody knows who's right, you know, whether the marathon approach is one way to do it or whether the stage approach is the better way. From our perspective, looking at this over with a number of different people, looking at the shared vascular anatomy between these two children, always the case historically is one child did well, one child did not, or both did poorly. We're trying to make this a situation where both do well, and to do that, I am convinced that the child that has the lesser of the circulation has to pick up more what we call the anastomotic network. And if we can do that successfully, I think the outcome will be good.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to do it over stages?
Correct.
What do you do, stage one, stage two? Or how many stages are there?
Well, stage one has essentially been done. That was placed in the tissue expanders, getting a feeling for the craniotomy. The next stage is essentially we're dividing the head up into thirds. And within each of those third compartments are major venous outflows. And we're going to be dividing those venous outflows to see how the children tolerate it. And as part of that, by doing it in a stage, the smaller of the two children will then be forced to develop its own deeper internal circulation.
Take collateral that takes over.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's your job then to help reconstruct the skulls of the children when
exactly.
they're done?
As Dr. Goodrich said, and if you look at the picture of these models, you can see that when these two skulls sort of come together, they essentially look like they're melted into each other. So when they're separated, they'll have a significant deficiency of all the layers of the scalp. And to have a good outcome, we've got to be able to put all that back together again.
And how do you do that?
Well, that's really been a tremendous part of our planning since last March. And what we've planned is, number one, a couple of flaps from either side of the boys will actually be borrowing to reconstruct the top of Carl's head. We're actually borrowing part of what looks like Clarence's scalp, and some hair that's been growing on Clarence's head will actually be shifted over the top to Carl's head so that he will maintain a normal hairline, and vice versa for Clarence. The problem is that just simply developing a good pattern to do that is not enough. We've got to be able to stretch the skin that's over the head, so that's where these tissue expanders come in. We've talked about that, and those are basically balloons that we insert under the skin, similar to the ones that are used for breast reconstruction. And so gradually working through the stages, we'll inflate those, stretch the skin, and the technique for reconstructing the bone is one that we use very frequently, and that is to separate the skull bone, which is in an inner and an outer layer. We separate that, and we get twice as much bone than what we started with, and that basically gets pieced together. We use little plates and screws that dissolve with time, and they'll be quite rigid.
Dr. Goodrich, what is the most dangerous, tricky part of this separation?
Really the final stage when you're separating. The children share a very large draining sagittal sinus, and that's a large venous tributary. And
that's where venous means it's veins or
right,
draining.
It's the venous outflow. It's the outflow from the brain itself. And the problem always comes with that separation. If it's closed too tightly, if you haven't really gotten your anastomotic network up, then you get enormous venous swelling, brain swelling, and, of course, all the consequences associated with that. That's the reason why we're looking at it as a staged approach to try to avoid that.
Has this been tried many times before, the staged approach?
It's been in and out of favor. I mean, if you historically go back and look at the cases, there's about 40 cases in total. And starting on 1953, the first ones were actually done staged. Then they went into the one approach. Now some of us are back to that again.
Well, let's take a call. Let's go to, is it Kalen in Boulder?
Yes, that's right.
Hi, Kalen. Go ahead.
Hi. I guess I wanted to ask a little bit about what the risks are to the health of the conjoined twins, and with the point sort of in mind that I guess I can imagine them, I can imagine that they could live productive and fairly happy lives possibly being joined, and yet I wonder whether the risks of separating them is really greater than we would accept with other surgeries.
Well, it's a good question to ask, and let me point out that historically living to the age of 10 as a conjoined twin was only 10%. So that even if the children survived and lived in the state that they were in, because of the sharing of diseases between the two, the risk of one dying and the other following shortly thereafter, keeping them conjoined, the risks are also quite enormous.
I'd just like to address another aspect here concerning their health, and that is when Carl and Clarence arrived in New York about 5 weeks ago, they were at the point where, in spite of a great mother who's a registered nurse taking care of them and a lot of support from the community, they were already really falling way behind in terms of weight. They're about 60% the weight that we would have expected. And part of their problem is the fact that they are conjoined. They're forced to be on their back. Neither one of them can sit up to eat or drink. And so not only is eating and drinking a difficult thing for them, but it's also caused Clarence to actually aspirate, have food and water go down the wrong way. That has led to pneumonia. Now, if you combine pneumonia in a baby with malnutrition, that's certainly very, very, very bad for their health. So I think that by the time they got to New York, they were just starting on a downward spiral.
How old are the twins?
They're 18 months
18.
Now.
Do they recognize you? Do they know who you are, the doctors?
They very quickly learn we're the bad guys.
Is that right?
Well, they're still smiling at me. But
they act like, you know, 18 months old usually, yeah?
No, they are slow cognitive. I mean, these are two alert, bright children with entirely different personalities, which is really quite amazing.
In what ways?
Well, I jokingly refer to one as the philosopher because he's a very quiet, withdrawn, kind of laid-back kind of kid. The other one, I use a politically incorrect term. I call him the terrorist because he's constantly whacking his brother over the top of the forehead with a toy. So despite being the more diminutive of the two, definitely the feisty one.
He hasn't whacked you yet?
He's tried.
He does. Yeah. You know, by the time we first met them at the airport, Carl took one look at me and he knew I liked physical humor and he started whacking his brother over the head. But now as Clarence has gained weight, he's starting to get even. But again, at this age, we would expect Carl and Clarence as separate babies to be getting up and cruising around and learning their environment. And because they're conjoined, they're limited, and they're starting to really fall back in milestones. So it gets back to...
Interesting. Susan in New York, you're next. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd like to follow up on the issue of you just mentioned that they're bright and active. Are you working with perhaps with any teams of cognitive scientists to understand what their baseline functioning is and through the intermediary, you know, how this has changed through the intermediary stages of your surgery? And
are you a psychologist, Susan?
No, but my son is a doctoral student in cognitive science at Johns Hopkins University, so I'm following his interests in that sense. So,
well, actually, one of the things we did before I'm bringing the children here was putting them up at Blythedale Children's Hospital up in Valhalla, which is a rehabilitation hospital. And yes, that very question is being addressed. Not only are they getting physical therapy and occupational therapy, but they're also getting developmental and early learning intervention. And there are two local in-house psychologists that are following the children to answer the same questions that you just asked.
I see.
Thanks for calling, Susan.
Thank you very much.
Who's picking up the bill for this? This must be very expensive.
You're going to get part of it at the end of the month when your check arrives. Actually, in all seriousness, this is being done pro bono on the part of the hospital, and all of the medical staff that involved have all donated their time. And Blythedale Children's Hospital has also donated their services.
Talking about conjoined twins this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Any lessons from the twins in Texas? You know, anything you can learn from what they went through recently or their doctors? Talk to them at all?
Well, certainly. Dale Swift, who's a neurosurgeon, was one of my former residents, and Ken Shapiro, the other pediatric neurosurgeon, was at Montefiore when I came, so I know them both very well. And actually all the various teams, Dr. Goh of Singapore, the group out in UCLA, group at Salt Lake City, we've all constantly in communication.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing okay, those twins?
One of them's doing beautifully. The other one, they're getting a little slow getting around, but it looks like he's coming.
Mm-hmm. And what is the biggest, once you get, let's say that you get the conjoined twin separated, what is the biggest danger then following that surgery?
There's several of them. Obviously, if Dr. Staffenberg, if we're not able to get adequate coverage, then you get what we call spinal fluid leak. They can develop infection and meningitis, encephalitis secondary to that. Those, of course, have their own whole realm of complications that need to be dealt with. So that's why Dr. Staffen works.
You want to pick that thought up?
Well, I think that's really something that we have to anticipate from the beginning. And from day one back in March when we started planning, it was all of these problems that we were able to anticipate that we're going to be working towards. So the problems that we expect to see at the very end, like inadequate soft tissue coverage, is something that we address on day one. So every stage along the way is going to be not just sort of accomplishing what Dr. Goodrich needs to accomplish with the veins, but also will be gaining ground in preparation for the final separation.
Do you think this, as word gets out about, you know, your successes and other doctors' successes, is this going to be a specialty? I mean, that people will, surgeons like you will specialize in conjoined twins? Or obviously people are going to hear about you, and their other mothers and parents around the world are going to say, hey, you know, maybe if we bring our kid to Montefiore in New York.
Well, actually, in credit to ours, we have a wonderful craniofacial center, the Montefiore Medical Center, which is actually developed to deal with these types of problems, not craniophagus per se, but certainly craniofacial disorders in their genera we deal with every day. I mean, this is our expertise and our specialty, and I have the privilege of working with an enormously talented team. And so, yes, if those mothers are out there, we'd love to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just the idea that you've got to get a good surgeon to do this, but in order for us to be able to even consider this kind of thing, we've got to have incredible nursing and very talented hospital staff, geneticists, speech therapists,
right.
Dental. I mean, it just goes on and on, and it's an enormous effort, the Craniofacial Center. So this isn't a team that Dr. Goodrich simply put together for Carl and Clarence. This is a team
right.
that works together every day.
I only have about a minute left. Let's talk about that team. How many people are gathered around the operating table during this?
Well, for the first one, there were about 20 by the time you counted in all the anesthesiologists, mm-hmm. nursing personnel, and the docs. That number will probably get a little bit bigger further we get into it.
Very interesting.
Biggest thing is keeping the doors locked because everybody comes and wants to come walking in.
What music are you playing on?
We usually start out with a little bit of heavy rock. We get into classical, and then Great Balls of Fire is usually the closing piece.
That's great. So will you come back and join us as the surgery progresses and come back and tell us how it's going?
Actually, would love to.
I want to thank both of you for taking time to join with us. Dr. James Goodrich is a pediatric neurosurgeon, and Dr. David Staffenberg is the chief of pediatric plastic surgery. Both are at Children's Hospital at Montefiore Center in New York. Thanks again for joining us. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to physicist Brian Greene. He's got a new PBS special coming up to talk about string theory and everything you wanted to know, the elegant universe. It's tough stuff to understand. It's fascinating, and we're going to try to get our hands around it, so don't go away. We'll be right back after the short break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.